Okay, I like to keep these kind of things fairly informal, so if you have any questions along the way, please feel to just interrupt me and ask away.
I'll just work this thing out first.
So how many of you out there have heard of the Linux standard base before? Yeah. Well, that's getting better. At least there's people who've heard of it now. So I'll go through a bit of an intro first on what the Linux standard base is, what it covers, go through some of the specification documents for those people of you out there who are developers. This is really an intro to what you should be doing to try and get your applications out there LSB compliant, and some reasons on why that's a good idea. Go through the build tools, some of the testing you can be doing, and finally some certification issues. So what are the major goals of the Linux standard base? The main aim of the Linux standard base is to be able to take any LSB compliant binary and put it on any LSB compliant distribution, and that binary will work as you'd expect. At the moment you go out there, you download, say, an RPM for Red Hat, and you try and install it on SUSE, and it's a bit of a gamble as to whether you'll be linked against the right libc. Yes, yeah, same processor. Yeah. You're doing pretty well if you can run it on a different architecture. and you have troubles with libc, it may install files from the wrong place, so it's trying to read a configuration file from one area and it's installed in another area, puts log files in the wrong place, that kind of thing. So these are the kind of things we're trying to address with the Linux standard base. The other area is to work with ISVs out there who are trying to port either from Unix or Windows to Linux, to get feedback from them as to what kind of interfaces they need. So do they need threads, do they need asynchronous I.O., those kind of issues. And work as a conduit through to the rest of the Linux community in getting that information fed back to them. So the kernel developers and the libc developers can work towards what the ISVs out there need. So our organisation, the Linux standard base is actually a work group of the Free Standards Group organisation. It was really, the FSG was really built for the LSB initially, but these days it looks after quite a few other open standards efforts. You might have heard of things such as the File Hierarchy Standard, which is another work group. There's the Open Cluster Framework, and the other large one is internationalisation. That's quite a big issue with Linux at the moment, and we want distributions out there to be able to handle all those strange languages and characters that people use. So how are we organised? We've got a steering committee for the LSB. There's like a chairman that reports to the Free Standards Group, and then for all the major parts of the work that we do, we have a representative on this committee. So the written specifications, test suites, something we call a sample implementation. This shouldn't be confused with a reference implementation. It's just an example of what you can do. It's not intended to be something which a distro would take and then actually use for a real distribution. And then we have the build environment, which helps you build LSB compliant apps. So one question I get often asked is, why should open source projects care about binary compatibility? After all, you're out there, you get the source code, you can just download it and build it. Well, as someone who actually sometimes releases software, one reason is I don't want to have to build, say, three or four different binary versions for users out there. It'd be really nice if I could just release one LSB binary. There's less in terms of receiving bug reports, you don't need to worry about, okay, was it this binary which I released or that one for this distribution. You get less variation in the binaries which you release and build, and so the bug report handling coming back and debugging is much easier. Complying with standards helps. A lot of free software projects out there aren't Linux specific. They'll run on BSD, they'll run on proprietary Unixes as well. If you comply with standards like the LSB, it will make it much easier for when it comes to porting to other Unixes. And users out there, if they download your open source software, they're going to try it on other platforms than you've actually got yourself. It also helps when it comes to changes in things like base libraries like libc. If you're only using LSB compliant interfaces, you know that those are going to be supported for a while in the major distribution because they have to remain LSB compliant. So you don't need to worry about an interface disappearing underneath your feet. As I said earlier, it reduces the variety of bug reports, and it's also easier for users. These days, there's a lot more people out there who don't know how to compile the source code. They're mums and dads or whatever, they're using Linux on the desktop. They just want to download binary and install it easily, rather than having to work out all these dependencies, work out what build tools they need, and try and get it exactly the same way as you built it on your system. That's just too hard for a lot of people these days. So our current status, we released the 1.3 version of the LSB specification last year at Linux World New York. We formally support five architectures out there. So we started with IA32, we added PowerPC 32-bit, IA64, Z-series, both the 31, 32-bit and 64-bit systems. We've got in the pipeline support for 64-bit PowerPC, so we should be seeing that come out in a couple of months, as well as AMD 64. Basically, if there's other architectures out there that people would really want to see supported by the LSB, we're quite happy to add anything people want. We just need people to do the work for us. So that's doing things like writing the architecture specific part of the LSB for that architecture, and obviously running test suites and debugging the failures that might be specific to that architecture. Our certification program supports the five architectures which we've got specifications for. And we've got, there's two sides to that. You can certify distributions and also applications. At the moment, there's about 30 different products certified. And that's all distributions at the moment. So your major ones like Red Hat, SUSE, Mandrake, are all certified, plus some niche distributions out there. And Debian is currently going through the process of becoming LSB certified. In fact, recently Red Hat made a release that they now support, I believe, all five architectures in terms of certified distributions. LSB 2.0, I guess the big addition to C++. We get a lot of requests for that these days, and we're upgrading to SUSV3, which is the latest, basically the latest POSIX version of the specification. So introducing a few more interfaces there. Also adding things like IPv6, that kind of stuff in. We should get a new version of the specification either at Linux World New York in a couple of weeks or maybe early February. And we'll start the certification program for LSB 2.0 sometime around mid-year. So the LSB specification, it's a bit different from those who you might be familiar with something like POSIX or the single Unix specification. It's actually an ABI standard, not an API standard. So this means things like the shape of structures which you pass around are important, because that matters. If you make the structure bigger because you're adding another element in there, binary compatibility, that needs to be taken into account. You can't just do that ad hoc. It's multiple documents. We have this generic LSB, which covers everything which is not architecture specific. So things like the interfaces which we support. Nearly all the architectures support the same interfaces. Then, of course, you have the architecture specific components, things like the format of the object files, and those kind of issues. Where we can, we try and reference standards instead of specifying it ourselves. Linux, Unix is very large, there's thousands of interfaces, and for us to actually maintain and write our own standards would take many man years. So we reference POSIX, we reference the C standard, we use System 5 ABI, pretty close in most cases, and things like the file hierarchy standard. This also makes it easy, obviously, if you're porting from Unix to Linux and back and forth, because if we're pretty close to what POSIX specifies, then the major commercial Unixes will also support that. At the moment, the LSB covers the fundamental libraries. We're working our kind of way up, so things like glibc, utility libraries like cursors, and some base graphics libraries like the X11 libraries and MGL. We don't yet go to support things like GTK or Qt. A lot of those we've got problems with needing things like test suites, proper documentation for all the interfaces, and a willingness from the developers to actually commit to stabilizing the ADI. So we can't have new interface of the week or changing these parameters around or adding another parameter. We need stability on the order of a year or two, at least for their stable versions. We also specify the object file format, so that's things like ELF. The package format. I guess this was one of the more controversial issues which goes around. We finally decided on a subset of RPM version 3. That subsection or subset was specifically chosen so that you can use something like Alien to convert from an RPM to a DEB, and it will install on Debian-based systems fine. There's no requirement to actually run RPM on the systems or have an RPM database. You just need to be able to accept packages of that format. You don't actually need a package database at all if you don't want to. Commands and utilities. So something as simple as adding a user to a system has kind of forked on the different distributions. Running add user on Red Hat is different from running add user on Debian. So we've chosen core commands which we standardized. There's things like user add now, which works exactly the same on Red Hat as on Debian. So you can reliably, through scripts when you install your packages, add a user without having to worry about what distribution you're on. System initialization. This is another issue which has caused, I guess, difficulty traditionally in Unix systems. It's you install something which runs a daemon. At what point during the boot process is that meant to run? It'll depend on the system whether you did something like S80 or S70. If you wanted the script to do it automatically, you can't just go editing something like rc.local through that kind of method. So now we have dependencies where you can say, I need to be up after networking is up, or I need to be up after the mail server is up. And that makes life a bit easier for developers. So these are the major properties of an LSB-compliant application. You only use LSB-specified interfaces, at least dynamically, with a bit of a caveat below. You only use LSB-specified commands and utilities. If you use some command which only exists on one distribution, not the other, you're going to have problems later on. You link against the LSB linker instead of the standard Linux linker. So the general format of that is ld-lsb-ia64.so.1. There's a bit of an exception for i386 for some strange reason. There's just lsb.so.1. The main reason that was put in there is that the distributions are able to actually ship, say, two versions of the same library. And then the LSB linker will pull in the LSB versions of the libraries, and the standard Linux link will pull in, say, the latest cutting edge, which may not be ABI compatible, but at least people can use those as well if they want to. So in that way, we don't restrict distributions from shipping all the cutting edge stuff they want and remaining stable for the binary applications. When you use non-LSB libraries, you've got two choices. You can either link statically, or if you want to, you can supply shared libraries with your package. Now, those shared libraries themselves have to be compliant, so they only call LSB-specified interfaces, or they call other shared libraries which you provide. Should be FHS compliant. So put your files in the right place, install in the right place. This is important so you don't step on other people's software, and you know where other software we've installed if you're going to take advantage of it. You need to pass a functional verification test of some kind. So ideally what you'll have is some kind of automated test suite, or if you're interactive, you'll have a list of instructions which someone can do interactively. And you run that on the sample implementation and a couple of LSB certified runtimes, and make sure that it behaves how it's meant to. And as I said before, you should package in an RPM v3 format. For some people who don't want to use RPM as the delivery format, what you need to provide is an LSB compliant installer. So it might be binary, which is LSB compliant, or scripts, which are themselves LSB compliant. So the main problem people run into when trying to build an LSB compliant application, building a binary, is simple versions for libc. As the LSB state freezes on 2.0, there'll be newer versions of libc out there. And by default, if you compile on your system, you'll link against the newer versions of various interfaces, so you won't be compliant, because a slightly older distribution won't have those newer interfaces yet. Header files. Again, as ABI changes are made in various libraries, the size of structures change, macro values may change for some reason. So you need header files which have the correct definitions in them. And you need to link against the LSB linker. So without any tools, this can actually be a bit tricky. Finding an old version of the system to get the right libc versions can be tricky, and getting the right header files and all those kind of areas is annoying. So we address this by a few methods. We provide some stub libraries. So these libraries basically, they contain no code. All they are shared libraries with the correct interfaces versioned correctly. We have some header files which have been created basically from our database of what all the macro values should be, what the structures, the size of them, and how they should be laid out. And we have a couple of tools which either wrap around GCC or provide this virtual environment where you only see LSB compliant libraries and header files. I'll just go into a bit more detail for those. These build tools, you install this LSB dev base package, which you can download from the linuxbase.org website. Contains the stub libraries for the specific version of the LSB that you're building for, and header files, which you can use to compile against. You then install either LSB dev CC or LSB dev to root, and then start going ahead and building. At the moment, we've also got something called LSB dev C++. Compiling compliant C++ applications is a bit tricky at the moment. You need to statically link against the C++ library. So we have some extra tools which allow you to do this. With 2.0 being supporting C++, you won't need that tool anymore. So what's LSB dev CC? It's basically a wrapper program. It used to be a shell script, kind of turned into a C program these days. Basically passes extra flags through to the compiler, so you include the right header files for your system, you set up the right link paths for all your libraries, and it makes you use the LSB linker for the runtime linker instead of the standard Linux linker. Advantages of this, you've got the full system out there, support C++, and to use it, it's actually really simple. You just do something like CC equals lsbcc.configure, and for a lot of applications that are already could be compliant, that's all you have to do. Any type make uses the right compiler. If you don't have configure, then just something like cc lsbcc make, and it'll tell you if you try and use an interface which is not part of the LSB, because it'll just fail to link. The stub libraries don't contain those non-compliant interfaces, and you'll get a link error. Obviously, if you use some kind of structure which isn't part of the LSB, you'll also get errors back from the compiler. I've got a bit of an example later on the kind of things you'll see. LSB dev to root. This basically sets up a to root environment which you can either use to root to get into, or you can run an SSH daemon on a high port and log into it. So it looks like a virtual environment. It copies, or it doesn't copy, it uses bind mounts to put a basically the same directory structure in there, which you'd normally expect. But it overlays things like userlib. So instead of userlibc being the normal libc, you'll get the stub libraries for libc instead. So when you try and compile a link, you'll get the correct version, or the LSB versions of the various libraries and header files. User include also has the LSB header files instead of your standard header files. This, I guess, LSBdevCC, advantages of using this as opposed to LSBdevTurut, most of the LSB developers these days use LSBdevCC, so it's had a lot more testing, and we use it to build our application battery. Now, what the application battery is a set of applications which we've built to be LSB compliant. Gives a good test of the build environment. It's actually a good test of the specification as well. We realize that there's interfaces out there that lots of people are using that we haven't included. Gives us feedback. And we also use it for testing distributions. So if someone claims to have an LSB compliant distribution, we can run these applications on it, and if they have problems, then we know there's a problem with the distribution. The full development environment's available. You can see all your other libraries, which you may want to dynamically link and then ship with your application. Some of the disadvantages, configure scripts tend to be pretty clever about finding things like header files, which may be on your system. So you may accidentally include header files which you didn't mean to, and pollute your binaries with structures which aren't standard. And it can't handle all situations. Very GCC specific, although theoretically you could write a wrapper for other compilers as well. Not yet. That's probably a good candidate for someone to try. There is an alternative where people can use LSBdevTurut, and that's probably the easiest way to go if you want to use something like the Intel compiler. So the advantage of this, it's compiler independent. You can use whatever compiler you want. It's a bit more tolerant of makefile problems. Occasionally people don't specify CC in the makefiles, so it calls the default compiler instead of calling LSBCC. It's harder to set up because you've got to use all these bind mounts. I guess bind mounts didn't really do all that I really wanted to or thought they did at first. So some systems you have trouble upgrading. It tends to hold the bind mounts very strongly, so if you try and move the file when something's bind mounted to another file, you get errors. So it has, I guess, usability problems, but it can be a safer environment to actually do your compilations in. Some package naming. This is an issue because applications out there tend to step on each other's people's names. They install in different areas, and we needed to get some way of having a unique name for all packages and dependencies for other packages. If you look on various distributions, they'll call packages slightly different names. So the general rules are all your packages must start with LSB dash. So that's given us our own namespace, which we can control. If there's just one hyphen in your name, so you're going to say you're going to package Apache, then it's LSB-Apache. You need to get that name registered with Lenina, which is the Linux Assigned Names and Numbering Authority. They look after things like device numbers and that kind of stuff as well. If you happen to own a domain name, then that way there's a method you can get your own namespace within LSB, so you don't need to register your product in any way. Now, example might be lsb-ibm.com-websphere, and that way you'll know you have a unique name for your application package. Directory naming. When you install your applications, they should install into the opt hierarchy. So you get something like opt-lsb-ibm/websphere, for example. So again, you don't have problems with two similarly named packages overwriting each other's files. And again, for Netscript naming, it's very, very similar. You should use the unique name that you can generate from the rules above. So if you want to test for compliance, there's a tool called LSB App Check that goes through your binary and actually looks at the object format, checks that it's of the correct format, looks at all the dynamic symbols which you have as part of your binary. So if you use an interface called Foo, it'll check that Foo is part of the LSB interfaces. You can also search through shared libraries as well. So you say, I ship these shared libraries with my application. So if you find these in my binary, then it's not a problem. You should go through this FHS checklist, which we have on our website, which goes through, which lists the various issues, things like ops, where to put log files, where to put configuration files, and make sure the application complies with that. You should then download the LSB sample implementation, which is a really cut-down environment, which you can generally use something like a Chroot or User Mode Linux to run it in, and run it within that environment. If your application uses interfaces which aren't otherwise supported, or you use some program, then you'll see the errors pretty quickly. And you should also test in a couple of other LSB compliant runtimes, just to be sure. We're also developing an RPM package format checker. So that'll go through and check that your package is of the right format. It'll do things like check that you don't use trigger scripts, which are part of RPM v3, but we don't allow because there's no way of easily translating those to, say, Debian scripts. So this is an example of LSB app check running. This is a non-compliant binary. Just ran it on a version of Apache, which happened to be on my system. So you can see up there, checking for LSB spec 1.33. Because it hasn't been compiled using the build tools, it's saying you're using the standard Linux linker instead of the LSB linker. So it's called to talk about the program interpreter. You're using a couple of shared libraries that you shouldn't use. If you need those, you should either statically link for those or ship those with your system, which may be problematic. And you're using a bunch of stuff from glibc, which either is the wrong version of the symbol or it's an interface which hasn't been included in the LSB. Some of those are actually internal. So if you're compiling it to stub libraries, you'll get the correct internal versions of those symbols. So as mentioned before, the LSB application battery, which you can download for various architectures, these pre-built binaries. And also, if you look in CVS, you can see how they're built. So they serve as a good example to developers who are trying to make their application compliant, but aren't quite sure how to address some of the problems they see. They can have a look at the major applications. There's versions of Apache, rsync, Samba. See the various, look at the various flags we had to tweak or various make file changes we had to make, and see whether they would work for your application as well. So I took a case study of rsync. I think Fridge might be here, unfortunately. As an example of making an application compliant. This is one of the early ones. It's a nice application in that there's no user interface that's hard to test. It's all command line. Only exercises network code a bit, which was part of the various interfaces, and doesn't use much which is outside of the LSB specification. So you can see here, you download rsync. Basically do cc equals lsb cc configure. So you see it
a whole lot more output than that, obviously,
but you can see a couple of lines there. It links against libresolve, configure finds it. It's not part of the LSB yet, but lsb cc found a static version of libresolve on the system, so it managed to configure correctly. Configure knows now to statically link that instead of dynamically linking that. Same with piopt. Okay, so we try to make it, and we start seeing these weird compiler errors. So this is probably something you're going to come across when you're trying to build your application for the first time, LSB compliant. So we have a look at the source code, have a look at clientname.c, and see what it's talking about there. So we have a look at clientname.c, and we'll see a whole lot of hash ifdefs in there about using basically IPv6. Now the LSB 1.3 version of the specification doesn't support IPv6. So what do we do there? If we go back a bit further and look at the output of the configure, we'll see that it's checked for IPv6 there, and it says, okay, Linux glibc. And it's basically looked to see what version of libc is installed in the system and went, oh, okay, you've got Linux glibc, you've got IPv6 support. So what's kind of the moral there is you should probably test for functionality rather than the system that you're building or running against. So actually try to compile against a little stub program which uses IPv6 and see whether you can actually compile and link against that. Luckily, rsync has a little --- disable IPv6, so we reconfigure it, recompile, and see what happens. All goes through fine, except for the final link at the end. So it's actually said authenticate.o has used this function called getPass, and it can't find a simple format. So if you look getPass up, it's in glibc, but if you look at the man page closely, it kind of says, don't use this function. It's obsolete. Unfortunately, the man page doesn't actually give you any alternatives. You look around in the various specifications and there's no equivalent to what getPass does, which is, I'm assuming, why rsync uses it. If you dig far enough in the info pages, it actually says, don't use getPass, but here's a little excerpt of code which you should use instead. So that's what we did. It's probably not ideally you'd want something like that in libc itself rather than cutting and pasting little bits of this getPass code into every application. But to make it compliant, you have to do this. So we repatched the source, rebuilt the binary, built successfully, we run LSB app check, and when it works correctly, it'll just exit and not report any problems. So what further testing should we do? We should then grab the rsync binary, get the LSB sample invitation, run a few tests on it. You might take some of the rsync tests out and run those within the sample implementation. We've actually written some functional verification tests for the LSB, which are pretty simple, but we use them for distribution testing. The tools, there's no tools available to automatically check FHS issues. That's generally pretty difficult to do in an automated fashion. You need to exercise all the code paths to make sure it's accessing files in the right place or writing files in the correct place. So at this point, it's probably easier to do it manually, kind of review your source code to make sure you're either installing in the right place, your config files go all in the right place, and you're writing files to the right place. So what do you go through from then? If you're an ISV, you're selling some open source software, and you want to advertise that this is LSB compliant, your customers out there can buy your software and be confident that it's going to run on all the LSB compliant distributions. The LSB set up this formal certification program where you can put it through it. It's run by a certification authority, which is the Open Group. They're the ones that own the Unix trademark. They do the Unix certification as well, so it's something they're pretty well experienced with running. You don't have to formally certify yourself to be LSB compliant. To use the LSB trademark, however, you do have to go through this formal certification process. And you also have to certify your application on each architecture rather than just on one. Because there are differences between architectures, you could potentially be compliant on one architecture and not on another. And that's our funky little logo which you get to put on your box if you become certified.
It varies depending on an application or distribution. I think it's around the $1,000 to $2,000 mark.
That's US dollars. Yep.
So it's more for those commercial vendors out there who are selling their open source apps and see a benefit from being able to put their trademark, putting our trademark on their box and advertising their such. And because we do, I guess, a lot more testing than this, I'll go on about a kind of freer version of certification. Customers out there can have a lot more confidence in someone saying it's LSB compliant if they've gone through this certification process. So I guess that's the basic process you'd use of becoming certified. You go through some informal testing, you run all the tools. All the tools are free to download from our website. Everything we do through the formal certification process is basically available for people to do on their own without talking to us. You register your company, there's various trademark license agreements, all this legal stuff you have to do. Register your application. One thing you have to do is say that your application passes a functional verification test, and we may check these at a later time. You also have to promise that if you get through the whole process of becoming formally certified, then someone comes along and says, hey, I did this extra bit of testing which you didn't do, and your application isn't compliant. You have to promise that you'll actually go back and supply a patch to make it compliant. That's part of committing to this program. So in terms of certified runtime environments which you run, you get to choose one, and then we'll choose one randomly. So you can't just fix it so it works on, say, Red Hat and SUSE, and then forget about the rest. We may pull out this random distribution which you've never heard of, and it has to work on that as well if it's LSB compliant. You need to give us various journals, the LSB App Check Journal, so it does some output that's machine readable, which we can use and store, and does various checks for us. And then there's obviously confirmation payment. In terms of if there's problems, you can appeal to what we have, this specification authority. If you think that there's a bug in the specification and your application is actually, well, should be compliant, this is how things are really done on Linux. All the LSB compliant distributions do this anyway, but your tests are wrong, you can appeal to them. And the last kind of appeal is to the Free Standards Group Board of Directors. That's a process to go through. Yeah. There's basically, for maintenance updates, we have to trust people. If it comes out that they release a maintenance update, it breaks compliance, then they promise beforehand that they'll fix it up. If they refuse to fix it up, we'll withdraw permission for them to use the trademark, and they've signed legal agreements that they'll withdraw their product and all that kind of thing. It could be pretty expensive for them. New functionality version, so if you make major changes to your product, then you need to recertify. And you do also need to recertify after 2 years as well. That's not too much of a problem with most product cycles. There's also, what we have is a self-tested program. So there was a lot of, I guess, push from the open source projects out there who don't have a couple of $1,000s to spend on certification, but they want to be LSB certified. They want to kind of have this thing of saying, we've gone through all the work of being LSB certified, so you can trust our applications. We're setting this up, it's not running yet. It's totally free, it'll be running off our website. You basically go through the same process as a formal certification, as you would through the formal certification program, but we don't do as much checking, obviously, on the steps that you take. There'll be a register on the website, so people who are looking for LSB compliant applications can go to our website, have a look it up and see, okay, they've gone through the work, this one's LSB compliant, you can download it from here. They need to make the same kind of promises about the application runs in the correct place, we'll fix the application up, those kind of things, but I guess from a legal point of view, it's a lot harder for us to enforce them to actually do that. So here's some useful links for you if you're looking for more information. especially the build environment. I guess for those who are looking to compile their own applications, this is the place to go. There's a mailing list, which is most of the LSD core developers are on that. If you've got questions, feel free to ask them there. And some information about the certification program if you're looking for formal certification issues. Are there any questions? No? Can I see? Yep. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We are talking with some of the major ISVs now. Various ones come to us occasionally and say, okay, what do we do? We're actually in talks with some, and hopefully we'll get some of the formal, or some of the larger companies out there starting to release LSB compliant applications soon. The major blocking point we've had with most of the ISVs is there's a lot of C++ code out there, and it's not so easy to do it with LSB 1.3, but LSB 2.0 should solve that. To linuxbase.org, yep. There's contact details there, and someone should get back to, limitation if they contact us. Now, Janice, I think Janice in the room will correct me with this. There's various ABI problems with Fortran, I believe. There being lots of different versions of Fortran. That's correct. And Janice, on IP86 even. Right. Yeah, a lot of commercial Fortran. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's something we have to really try and push, I guess, to the Fortran people, that we need some kind of standard at least. If you're using some stuff, you can just compile your Fortran apps, and because it compiles, it uses the GCC stuff, you'll get a compliant application anyway, because it uses C libraries. Right, okay. Yep, because you get much better code, yeah. So I guess if there's enough people requesting that, then that's something we'll look at. It's not something we've had a lot of push from developers. There's a... I think that's how they generally run certification programs. I guess they think after 2 years there'll be maintenance updates, that kind of thing over that time, and it's time to recertify. Generally, there's not that much work involved in there anyway. But to be honest, I don't know completely why that decision was made. I didn't develop a lot of those kind of areas of the program. Anyone? Yes?
You mentioned the GCC earlier.
Yep. So if I was to make a guess, I would say that GTK is probably going to be the first GUI library that gets into the system. We have started talking to them. There's other issues to do with good specification of all the interfaces, what they do. We need that, and we also need test suites. Because if we include it in the LSB specification and someone gives us a distribution, we need to be able to test that from a behavior point of view, they do exactly what they're meant to. And that can be very tricky. Yes. For example, we're currently bootstrapping some X test suites, which we've managed to get. And it uses things like frame buffer mode and makes sure that things go in the right place and the various calls do the right things. They're very hard to make, though, and we haven't even got the latest version of the X test suites because they're just simply too expensive for us to get them. The Open Group's been pretty good at giving us a lot of Unix test suites, and actually donating the code and making it open source, and that's bootstrapped us a long way. But we're at the stage where we either need to buy more test suites, find some money from somewhere, or write our own, which is takes a lot of time. That's where you have some problems with using libraries which aren't part of the OSB. Really what we want is those libraries to be standardized so that we keep a hold of things like SO versioning, symbol versioning. Ted Cho, is that... Sorry? Yes. Well, we specify A to SO symbol versioning, yes. I think we actually just specify the... it depends on the actual library itself. I'd have to look up what we specify for each library. But with things like libc, it'll use symbol versions, because that, so that's an extra check that you're using the right versions of the interface. I believe so, yes. Yeah, I'll check all of them. There's a specific case that you want me to have a look at. I can have a look at that. All right. Yep. Any other questions? Yep. Yes. I suspect that we'll need C++ in there before we get major applications out there, because from at least most of the vendors that I've talked to, they're all C++. Seems to be language choice. The other push we get is from Java, and we haven't got, strictly speaking, we haven't really got any Java support in there. If someone could provide an LSB compliant version of Java, then that would go a long way. But there's lots of work to be done there. Anything else? Yes, yeah, yeah, for that kind of error, we do. Although I think for at least C, for the C side, they can use the Intel compiler and they will get, or they can get LSB compliant applications. There's no problems there. From what I've heard, Intel's actually pretty good about trying to keep AVI compatibility with the rest of Linux. Okay, I think that's it.